Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network, suboptimal radio.
Oh, good ball through Osorio! Osorio! Team goal for Canada!
Bravo! All right, CONCACAF, full swing. U.S. Men's National Team, Mexico, Canada, El Salvador, Panama. We got you covered, the only place that does it all. Vamos, presented by Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. And I'm your host, Hercules Gomez. In this episode, lots to talk about. We're going to talk about the CONCACAF Nations League, unpack the latest results, and who are the kings of CONCACAF. We also have to talk about the FIFA fixture window in Major League Soccer, the insistence to play in it. So what are you waiting for? Vamos! All right, let's talk about this FIFA fixture window for the U.S. men's national team in this CONCACAF Nations League tournament. Opening game versus Grenada, 7-1 win away from home. All Euro starting 11. That's right, an all Euro starting 11. Actually, Miles Robinson was a healthy scratch, so not a single player from Major League Soccer in the 23-man roster. The fewest since the existence of Major League Soccer in this landscape. Few things that we noted. Gio playing centrally. That was interesting. It took some time for him to get adjusted, neither here nor there. So-so performance. Austin Trusty looked really, really good, continuing his stellar play. A few nervy moments in the midfield with no Tyler Adams. He just had surgery on his hamstring. So it was a double pivot of Luca Della Torre and Weston McKennie. It was okay when they had the ball defensively. A moment of transition they wish they had back, absolutely. But we got to talk about Christian Pulisic.
Della Torre into the path of Pulisic, and it's over the line. Christian Pulisic has his goal to go with his first half assists.
A 5 goal output. That's right. 1 goal, 4 assists. Absolutely ridiculous game by the Chelsea man. And then Weston McKennie, a double. And Ricardo Pepi. Ricardo, do not leave me out of the World Cup ever again. Pepi of Groningen with the double in that opening game. Alejandro Sendejas came off the bench. Looked very good. Actually, very first touch. Turns, shoots, goal. Very lively, dynamic in the final third. And I understand, it's Granada. But let's not take anything for granted. This team was horrid playing away from home last World Cup cycle, so a 7-1 win is never anything to sneeze at. All right, game two against El Salvador in Orlando at home. Another win versus El Salvador. Actually, it's the 26th game in a row that they've managed to not lose to El Salvador. It was a boring 0-0, oftentimes just terrible performance by the U.S. men's national team until
Pepe tried to get in around the back. Ricardo Pepe! Straight into the game and straight into the back of the net. Ricardo Pepe gives the U.S. the lead just after the hour in Orlando. Instant impact from Pepe.
An obvious winner in this FIFA fixture window. Ricardo El Tren Pepe. While everybody here was talking about Folarin Balogun, the dual national potential, the switch from England to the U.S. men's national team, he reminded everybody, I'm Ricardo Pepi, I'm still fighting, I'm still scoring goals. In fact, he became the third youngest U.S. men's national team player to get 6 goals, just behind Jozy Altidore and Christian Pulisic. Some very good company. He even told reporters after the game, I'm happy to just be in the squad and scoring goals again after missing the World Cup. I think I made a big statement tonight. I love that mentality. The kid has something to prove. He has the ability to combine. He scores goals. But now he has that chip on his shoulder. He has that fight in him. I love that. But maybe Ricardo Pepi being the obvious winner goes into who, unfortunately, was not a winner. Striker Daryl Dike, I mean, it made his performance look even more underwhelming. Dike never got himself going. He never felt dangerous. He never really was that man, that imposing figure he is when he plays in championship football. It was few and far between the actual moments when he made his presence felt. And these moments are crucial, especially in today's landscape at that nine position with the competition for it. Miles Robinson, another one that has something to prove, who really had an impact with his play. The Atlanta United man tore his Achilles last season. And I actually remember talking to him in MLS Media Day for Football Americas back in February of this year.
I was watching our guys play for like, you know, 8 months. I, you know, was watching from the couch the World Cup. Like I said, that fire is burning inside me. So I think I'm going to play with a different type of hunger and, you know, ferocity.
The fire is back. He told us that. He promised and he delivered. Only played the El Salvador game, but he was solid. Actually, no, he was more than solid. He was sound with the ball at his feet, easily the most athletic player in that back line, and didn't look like he was coming off a nine-month layoff. So Miles Robinson proving his worth, and it's good to see. So I will raise a Bud Light in his honor. I've been there. I've been on the mend 9 months out. It's never an easy thing. So this Bud's for you. And while we're at it, Anthony Hudson. Okay. Anthony Hudson had everybody on a high after Granada. They scored 7 goals away from home, something that they never did in the previous cycle, especially this team and how they struggled in the previous cycle playing away from home. He hit all the right buttons with his roster call-ups, the handling of dual nats like Alejandro Sendejas with Mexico, but he also showed us how important it is for U.S. soccer to hire that sporting director and then get a coach, a full-time coach, a real coach. He played El Salvador at home with the majority of his primetime players. And he was tactically ate up by Hugo Perez, the head coach of the El Salvadorian national team. His double pivot experiment with Weston and Yunus never really felt secure. We saw maybe the worst first half of football that I've seen from the U.S. men's national team in quite some time, certainly in recent memory. It's paramount that U.S. soccer stop losing time and get that manager. Get that sporting director so he can pick that manager. All right. I know you're waiting for this one. Mexican national team talk. New manager Diego Coca has his back against the wall. Started his tenure last Friday with a weak victory. It's a 2-0 victory versus Suriname. At Suriname, granted, it was Mexico's B team. Okay, give you that. Nonetheless, very underwhelming. Then you go back home in El Estadio Azteca and we're shocked.
Chance here from outside. From Jamaica! Unbelievable shot from outside the box!
That was Jamaica's Bobby Reed scoring a worldly, a golazo in the 7th minute. Jamaica drew 2-2, and the look on the Jamaican national team players at the end of this match really said it all. Literally, it was like, fuck, we let one go. Like, damn it, we should have gotten more out of this. Immediately after that goal, Mexican goalkeeper, Mexican legend, 5-time World Cup player, Guillermo Memo Ochoa. Every touch he had on the ball, he was booed by El Estadio Azteca, by his own fans. Why exactly are Mexican fans booing Memo Ochoa? The reality is, Memo Ochoa represents everything that the Mexican fans hate at this exact moment. The lack of generational change in the team, in this roster. A player who will be 41 next World Cup, who, by the way, may play his 6th World Cup, a feat no other player in world history has done. But the fans view it as a player blocking the next generation, not letting them get a chance. They view him as a sacred cow. He also wasn't the only one being booed. Raul Jimenez, the Wolverhampton striker, a player who's, let's face it, not been the same player since that unfortunate incident, that head-to-head clash with David Luiz back in November of 2020. Also, Diego Coca, the Mexican national team manager, it's his second game and he's already hearing the Fuera Coca. He's already hearing the boos. He's already hearing Coca out. Actually, it's not the first time the fans have turned. A few months ago in the World Cup cycle, Hector Herrera of the Houston Dynamo had this to say about the fans.
Siento que el Estadio Azteca es súper grande y a lo mejor dice, ah, es que impone, sí, es muy grande y es muy bonito, pero el ambiente no, yo no siento que sea tan fuerte como para que el rival diga, estoy cagado, ¿no? Por así decirlo.
What Hector Herrera is basically saying here He's alluding to the stadium, the Azteca, that it no longer holds the weight. It no longer intimidates the opponent like it used to. And he's referring to the fans and their lack of support. And it really is interesting because if we talk about the fortress that it once was, and I've played there many times for Club of Country, I actually remember being with the U.S. men's national team in Estadio Azteca, 1-0 win back in August of 2012. The first and only victory for the U.S. men's national team in El Estadio Azteca, friendly, a Michael Orozco goal.
Just lost control at the vital moment, plays it in towards Boyd, and the USA do have the lead, and it's Orozco Fiscal. Can you believe that? Who's poked it over the line with 11 minutes to go. What about that?
It's always a unique experience playing there. It really is. But I remember the first time getting off the team bus, and there's a long hallway that goes down into El Estadio Azteca, into the dressing rooms. And it's lined, the walls are lined with memorabilia. 1970, that ridiculous Brazil team led by El Rey Pelé. You look on the other side, 1986, there's Diego Armando Maradona lifting the World Cup trophy with Argentina. It's a lot of history there. Let's get into the reasons of why this stadium, El Estadio Azteca, no longer is that intimidating place to play. Back in the day, and I actually remember watching a U.S. men's national team versus Mexico game in 2001 there, a World Cup qualifying game, 120,000 people, 120,000 souls that live, breathe, and die for football in that stadium, just packed, rabid fans. Mexico also used to play at 4 p.m. The kickoff was when the sun was at its brightest, when it would beat down on you, when it really hurt to play there. The intense heat, the high altitude of Mexico City, the smog that comes with Mexico City, it's a killer combo for anyone. And also, we have to mention, the majority, if not all of the players back in the day, the players for the Mexican national team, they played domestically. They played in Liga MX, so they were all used to these conditions. Now, you have much more of a European sense in this Mexican national team roster. And it's great for the pool, having these players play at the highest of competitions, highest of levels in Europe. But when they come back to Mexico, when they come back to Estadio Azteca, they also suffer. The altitude and smog, they're not immune to it. They even changed the kickoff from a daytime kickoff, 4 p.m., to a primetime night kickoff. This to appease the television networks, the ratings. They want that money. And then you have the NFL. That's right, the National Football League. They are a factor in this as well.
Buenas noches, Mexico! John Sogli, the reportero de cancha. Estadio Azteca. Vamos a enseñar la pasión. The passion for la NFL.
That was John Sutcliffe of ESPN Deportes and his signature call. It's crazy, but Mexico fans are actually rabid for the NFL as well. The National Football League comes to Estadio Azteca, but with it come specific requirements for the stadium. Prime luxury seats, the suites. They actually removed about 30,000 seats from the stadium. So what once was 120,000 rabid fans on top of you with the seats and these gardens that they put up now feel secluded with a reduced capacity. All this because they want the dollars. They want the business of the NFL. They lose the advantages that El Tri, the Mexican national team, once had. And then there's the disconnect with the Mexican national team fans and how they feel with this team. And there are many theories of why that disconnect is around. The players have even blamed the media for the role they play in this. As Chucky Lozano actually did post this Mexico-Jamaica 2-2 draw.
Siempre tratamos de ganar, somos ganadores. Y el problema es que a veces los medios son los que afectan eso. La relación
All right,
entre
lot to unpack here. Chucky Lozano. And I quote, we always try to win. We are winners. The problem is that sometimes the media are the ones that affect this. This relationship between us and the fans. They need to support us. It's become such a toxic situation. I remind you that Mexico has been sanctioned multiple times over the last cycle due to the homophobic chant. So whether it's the fans, the players, or the media, the toxicity that surrounds the Mexican national team right now is undeniable. All right, so FMF, the Mexican Football Federation, and Mexico, the Mexican national team, they're in trouble. What do they need to do? Actually, just explore playing somewhere else, outside of the Azteca. You don't need a national stadium. Canada and the U.S. men's national team, they don't play in just one place. They spread the game around. Other countries do the same. You could do the same. Take it to Guadalajara. Take it to Monterrey, where you could argue the New Mexican powers are actually at, certainly financially, instead of just waiting for things to get worse, because they will. Who are the kings of CONCACAF? Is the U.S. men's national team a step above Mexico and Canada? Alejandro Sendejas, yes, Alejandro Sendejas, who once was with the Mexican national team, just committed full-time to the U.S. men's national team. According to various outlets, Sendejas said that the U.S. men's national team was a step above Mexico. Take a listen.
¿Tú crees que Estados Unidos es la mejor selección de la CONCACAF hoy por hoy?
Hoy por hoy yo digo que sí. Sí, somos la mejor.
¿Un escalón sobre México y Canadá?
Yo digo que estamos muy cerca, pero hoy por hoy yo digo que sí.
They asked him, do you feel like the United States national team today is the best national team in CONCACAF? He replied, today? Well, I would think so. Yeah, I would call us the best. Do you think they're a step above Mexico and Canada? He goes on to say, I think it's really close. But if I had to decide today over the three, I would say, yes, we are. So not as cut and dry as people are making out to seem, but the reaction in Mexico did not sit well down south. Till this day, it's still in the news cycle. This happened days ago. Mexico is supposed to be the giant of CONCACAF. And now a player who spurned the Mexican national team goes to its biggest rival and he's saying this? It was taken out of context. We know this, okay? But the sentiment stays the same. Is he right? All right, let's start with the U.S. men's national team. It's easily the deepest pool in all of CONCACAF. Doesn't mean they're the best team. A very young pool of players playing some of the best leagues and teams in the world. Can't argue that. The only CONCACAF team to get out of the last World Cup group phase. That's another fact. They also did it being the second youngest team in the World Cup, okay? And the last two trophies in CONCACAF up for grabs, it was the U.S. men's national team that won it. The Nations League versus Mexico in Colorado and Gold Cup in Las Vegas versus the Mexican national team with what some, and this guy would say, was a C team for Greg Berhalter and the U.S. men's national team. So it's difficult to argue that it's not just a ceiling, but this team right now, clearly, just on what they've done over the last calendar year, is a step above. But the lack of direction is troubling. At almost 3 years out from the World Cup, 3 years and some months out from one of the biggest moments in this program's history, no sporting director, no head coach. It's really the pool right now that's the only thing that makes you feel good about this team. And it's the ceiling that you're betting on. All right, let's compare the other kings of CONCACAF. It's Canada. And for that, let's go to my good friend, Kyle Larin.
It was important to win this game and show we're at a different level than these guys. And now it's time to go to play with we're the big boys. So we're going to go play against the guys and do what we did in the qualifying.
The big boys of CONCACAF. All right. They're the big boys to Kyle Larin. And listen, easily my favorite team to watch during the World Cup qualifying cycle. Easily. Undefeated both at home and away versus Mexico and the U.S. men's national team. The first and only team in CONCACAF history to do that during a World Cup cycle. First place in World Cup qualifying. So I had big hopes for them in Qatar. I really did. We had big hopes for them in Qatar. That is until John Herdman had this to say.
We're going to go and F Croatia. That's as simple as it gets.
Oof. Give a team like Croatia a World Cup runner-up. A team that actually, went third place in this current edition of the World Cup. With world-class players, give them bulletin board material. Oh, my God, what are you doing, John Herdman? Canada ended up being the second worst team in the Qatar World Cup. My favorite team, my favorite coach, collapsed. But Canada is still a very good team. Make no mistake about it. A very disciplined team, a great coach in this region with the ability to play you in multiple ways. With players like Jonathan David, Kyle Larin, Alfonso Davies, who's easily, for my money, the best player in CONCACAF right now. Today, that is him, Alfonso Davies. They're my favorites for the Nations League. It's not the U.S. men's national team. It's not Mexico. It's Canada. Mexico? That's a different situation. The reality is Diego Coca knew what he was getting himself into. He took over after an abysmal spell by Tata Martino, the ex-Mexican national team coach. The first time since 1986 that it did not get out of a group phase. That was Tata Martino. That was his failure. And now it's Diego Coca's cross to bear. Fairly or unfairly, that's the way it is. Technically, after a failure like that, you should be rebuilding. That's what happens after failures. You rebuild. The U.S. men's national team didn't make it to 2018 to that World Cup in Russia. They rebuilt. And Mexico should be rebuilding that program right now, but they're not. Maybe there's a shift in style and its play, but there is no generational shift. If you look at the roster that was called in by Diego Coca, 20 of those players were in Qatar. You look at his starting lineup versus Jamaica, 10 of those players started versus Saudi Arabia in the last World Cup game they played. Why? Why don't you see this? Why don't you see the change? Why isn't he bringing new players in? The younger generation. There's a reason. Diego Coca knows he has to win now. He's under immense pressure, and most likely he feels that not only does he have to beat the U.S. men's national team, but he has to win one of the two trophies available this summer, the CONCACAF Nations League in Las Vegas and or the Gold Cup. He has to try to win today with the players he feels are best today, regardless of age. He doesn't have that time in his head to bring in that younger generation. So that's Mexico today. A team that went zero trophies, last World Cup cycle, second place, which is unacceptable for most Mexican national team fans and pundits, and an early group phase exit. That's where the program is right now. Let me just close this debate of who the tallest Smurfs are in the room, because that's what it really is when we argue the giants of CONCACAF. And I know that may upset a lot of people, but let me just add really quickly, how upset CONCACAF executives must be today at Mexico. How bad Mexico are today. That they shat the bed and we are here today. Tying Jamaica at home, they finished fourth. They will make it to Las Vegas in the final four, but they finished fourth. That means they play first place, the U.S. men's national team. That 7-1 drumming to Grenada, oh, may have backfired on the U.S. men's national team. The inability to win in El Estadio Azteca, that also backfired on Mexico. They will now face each other in the semifinals, the CONCACAF Nations League and the Gold Cup. These tournaments are essentially designed for Mexico and the U.S. to meet each other in the final. That's what they want. Gold Cup, that's what it is. Different sides of the bracket. You meet each other in the final. You sell. That's where the money comes from. The gates, the sponsors, that's the draw. That's what CONCACAF wants. That's the best case scenario. This is worst case scenario for all CONCACAF execs. And not only that, I'd actually argue it's worst case scenario for Anthony Hudson and Diego Coca. One of those two managers, if they lose that game to the biggest rival, that could be their last stand.
We played a game when there's an international, so it doesn't make sense. You know, look at Atlanta's result tonight. I think they have five players missing. It just doesn't seem fair.
That was Inter Miami head coach Phil Neville speaking about the impact of the call-ups. Yes, the international fixture window for FIFA and their latest defeat, a 3-2 loss at the hands of the Chicago Fire at home in DRV Pink Stadium. Great name, by the way. All right, MLS has an overloaded schedule. The fixture calendar, it's a mess. It's a problematic issue. Sure, there were some great games that we saw last weekend. But how do you keep playing these FIFA international windows? 90 MLS players were called up to FIFA's March international window. 90. That's a massive amount of players. Back in the day, maybe with an overloaded calendar, it didn't hurt as much. It didn't matter because there weren't as many competitions and you can maybe make up that ground. But now with the inclusion of all these competitions, there really just isn't any room. All right, think of it this way. If you're a team like LAFC, like Vancouver, like a Philly who right now is competing in the CONCACAF Champions League, you've got MLS match days. You've got the CCL, the CONCACAF Champions League, which I just mentioned. You have Leagues Cup coming up, which will be a month long during the summer. You have the US Open Cup. On top of that, the FIFA fixture window. Oh, did I mention the MLS All-Star Game? And on top of that, we can add in the added playoff field that will be Major League Soccer. There are going to be more playoff games now than ever. That's a hell of a lot of games for a player. On top of that, all your best players leave for the FIFA fixture window. And that could be very problematic for managers, very problematic teams. This past weekend, some crazy scorelines.
Lovely pace and trickery on the left-hand side. Sands delivers. Shots on a goal! Make it six for the crew!
Columbus smashed Atlanta 6-1. I'm not saying Atlanta would have not lost this game. What I am telling you, and I know that Columbus was missing players as well. They were missing three. The 6-1 scoreline is insane. And yes, you could attribute that scoreline to the window. Atlanta were missing the likes of some massive players. Thiago Almada, the man just won a World Cup, for God's sake. Luis Abraham, Macho Chol, Derek Etienne Jr., Ronald Hernandez, Georgios Giacomakis, and Miles Robinson for the U.S. men's national team. I'm a massive fan of Major League Soccer. I've been a player of Major League Soccer. But come on, MLS, what are we doing? Seriously, still playing in these international fixture windows. Let's go, let's go, let's make you some money! Time for Drop the Bag, your ultimate sports betting guide. All right, Liga MX back at it. Atlas versus Chivas, one of the craziest rivalries in Liga MX. These two teams in the same city, Guadalajara, over 100 years of history between the two. They don't like each other, and this is an easy one for me. It's Chivas de Guadalajara to win at plus 195. Atlas has only won once in the last five games, and Chivas actually, the last seven times they played Atlas, they won all seven. That's easy money for me at plus 195. Okay, let's move across the pond. Arsenal versus Leeds. Total goals over 3.5 at plus 125. So I'm looking for a high scoring game, and so should you. Tyler Adams is injured. Just had surgery on that hamstring. That's an important player for Leeds. He's not going to be there. Brendan Aaronson and Weston McKennie, they'll be back into the fold from international duty. But this Arsenal team atop of the league versus a Leeds team that's just trying to stay afloat. Leeds have actually lost by two or more goals in the last 10 of their 16 league losses. And Arsenal, they've won by two plus goals in the last 7 of 11 home victories. So take the Arsenal versus Leeds total goals at 3.5. Take that over. Pays plus 125. All right, let's go to Italy. Napoli, league leaders in Serie A. We've already spoken about Chucky Lozano. He thinks he's a winner. Well, hopefully he'll make us win in this one. I'm taking the over goals at 2.5. That's 3 goals or more at plus 100. Napoli is favored in this one. It's a minus 141. Both play each other 3 times in the next 15 days. Two of those times being the Champions League. It is in Naples, and Milan is the worst defensive team in the top 10 of Serie A. Don't mind that they're in the top 4 in the standings right now. Defensively, they have struggled. Napoli, first in the league. They are flying high. I like this bet. For my next bets, I present to you the one, the only St. Louis City striker, Joao Klaus.
The only thing I'm sure I will give 100%. You know, in Brazil, we say it's my mother crying or their mother crying. So I don't like to see my mother crying, so I always go hard.
That is intense. Somebody's mother will cry. St. Louis versus Minnesota. I repeat, it's a double chance prop. Double chance prop. Listen to this. I found this prop. If Minnesota ties or wins in St. Louis, it pays you plus 100. I know. St. Louis is 5-for-5, a plus 15 goals scored. Joao Klaus is riding high. But I'm not expecting Minnesota, who, by the way, has only given up 3 goals, to just gift St. Louis a goal that we've seen now, what, 3 times already in league play? At some point, they're going to come back down to reality. And I think Minnesota is the one to bring them down to earth. Now, take each prop individually, bet responsibly. But if you want to get a little risky, if you want to just throw a little bet out there, see what comes of it. If you bet $10 and you parlay this, a 4-game parlay, it's plus 2,614. The total payout would be $271.40. Again, bet responsibly, but you're welcome. All right, time for Shooting It Straight. We're going to tackle some relevant topics as only we can do. Up front, raw, like it is, the real deal. This week, it's Alphonso Davies. Alphonso Davies, the best player in CONCACAF, actually had this to say. It's been making waves. Listen up.
Life as a footballer is cool, yes. You know, no doubt. Like, it's really cool to be a professional footballer, you know, to chill, to enjoy life, right? But after training, there's nothing to do. For me, because I don't have a family and my girlfriend don't live with me and I'm here by myself. I have probably 5 friends. Yeah, I'm a popular loser. Someone said poor guy.
All right, so Alphonso Davies actually said this on his Twitch channel some time ago because I remember when he said it, it just hit the news cycle and went viral today. Very important message. Many people, and oftentimes I think it too, when I hear the LeBron James of the world, when I hear, you know, these celebrities complaining about their life, it's, you're rich. What does it matter? I'd do it. Until you're there. I mean, he talks about the loneliness he feels. He talks about not having any friends. You could be as rich and famous and as popular as you'd want to be. Life as a footballer can be secluded. I mean, at all levels. I'm a guy that majority of my career in Major League Soccer made no money. I believe the most I made was like 52K in a single season before I left to Mexico. Win a goal-scoring title with Puebla in Liga MX, and my life changes. All of a sudden, I get sold to Pachuca. I have more money than I ever had in my life. I'm a single guy. I think I'm living the life. I get to Pachuca, and Pachuca's a small coal mining town where the only thing that matters is football. The only thing that matters is their team, Pachuca. And it's very much a culture where the married guys don't hang out with the single guys. I was one of two single guys on the team. My days would consist of training, rehabbing, that therapy, going home, and playing video games, hanging out by myself. Maybe talking to my friends when they had time, talking to my family members when they had time. But by no means did I feel that I had a fulfilled life there. Sometimes I look back as a footballer and I'm like, I've gotten to go to some amazing countries because of the game. But I can't tell you what these cities are like. I can't tell you what the sights and the sounds are like. I can tell you what the hotel rooms look like. It's not like you go out, you explore. You're saving your legs. You're resting, you're rehabbing, you're doing therapy, you're concentrating on that game. And oftentimes you have no personal life. In Pachuca, Torreon, some of these cities where I was in Mexico where the football was just massive, I couldn't even go out and just have a meal by myself. Fans would come up. They'd some very politely ask you for pictures, to sign something, and that's never a problem. Some would sit down while I'm having a meal and demand while I have my Subway sandwich literally in my mouth to give them answers as to why the team's not doing well. It is a lonely life. The sacrifices. And listen, I'm not sitting here and saying, don't do it. I'm not sitting here and saying it wasn't worth it. I'm just saying you sacrifice a lot. Weddings, birthdays, funerals. It's just the life of a footballer. So I understand what Alfonso Davies is going through. And this is a guy who's at the highest of levels. But on the most minute of levels, all footballers experience this. All people actually chasing their dreams who are sacrificing experience this type of feeling. It's just Alfonso Davies. He experiences it for the world to see. And with that, we come to the end of this episode of Vamos, presented by Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Don't forget, you can follow me on all my social media handles. That's Hercules G at HerculesG on Twitter, on Instagram, MySpace, Hi8, whatever you want. I am there. So thanks for joining us on this journey into the heart of our soccer culture. And don't forget, we'll be back every single Thursday. Until next time, vamos.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.